Thank you, Larry. That is twice now that you have so generously covered for me when it seemed like I had something else to attend to. And it is greatly appreciated. You are so willing. As soon as I asked, both times you said yes. This time, even though you were extremely sleepy. So greatly appreciated. And I was able to finish taking care of what I wanted to take care of, something that felt very urgent. So I appreciate that. I needed to send some messages to some people right away so that they'd have the chance to contemplate something today and get back to me today. So thank you. All right. So good morning, everyone. And happy, happy Wednesday. Larry will be back. That was a commercial. Larry will be back at 2 p.m. Eastern time today. Well, Larry also covered for me Sunday night. That's three times Larry, right? Because you covered for me so I could go to the Abbey. You covered for me Sunday night when I was tired, and then you covered for me today so that I could deal with something for a few minutes. So that is three times you have willingly said yes. So very much noted and appreciated. Thank you very much. I am your admin now until 2:30 Eastern time today, so I'll be here all morning. But the first couple of hours, I'm actually teaching. And in the last few weeks, I've come here with a series of teachings, which are related really to the primary practices that I've used on my spiritual path. One of the teachings was about how to cultivate and follow intuition. One of the teachings was about letting go of the belief, I am bad. One of the teachings was about root cause inquiry, inquiring into an upset. And so this is the fourth teaching in what appears to be a little series, although I assure you this series was completely unplanned. In fact, today I thought what we would do, because I really want to listen to some of the Timothy Conway satsangs that are available. I thought today during my 2 hours we would listen to a Timothy Conway satsang. But as I was doing my own personal contemplation this morning, it came to me that no, I was going to be teaching about discernment. So that's the way these sessions are happening. They're not planned, but in my contemplation on Wednesday morning, it's coming, ah, this is what you're going to do today. So this is what I'm going to do today. I'm going to talk about the type of discernment that I have used. And I will be honest with you right up front. It is a type of discernment that some people are afraid of. And the primary reason that people are afraid of this discernment is because of the I am bad belief. They are afraid of making mistakes, afraid of perceiving that they've made a mistake, afraid of perceiving that they've listened to the ego instead of spirit, or they heard spirit, but they wanted what ego was saying too much, and so they went with ego instead. And then, of course, judging themselves bad for that. And so the fear of I am bad, you know, the fear that that's the truth about who you are, right? I am bad. That is your truth. The fear of that belief can be so strong that it can keep people from practicing discernment. And so there are people who definitely are allergic to what I'm about to teach. There's an allergic reaction that may occur. Warning, warning. However, it's important to note that the I am bad belief is not at all true. And so the obstacle to practicing discernment is a false belief. And, you know, we kind of keep ourselves in a little trap, if you will, a trap of only listening to ego. If we are afraid to try discernment because we're afraid we'll make mistakes, and that means we're bad. So I'm going to tell you right up front, you will make mistakes, and it does not mean you're bad. It means you're learning. I made so many mistakes. But again, it's through the process of making mistakes that our learning can occur if we can look at our mistakes without the association that a mistake means I'm bad. So I would encourage you to be willing to make mistakes. Say, it's okay. I'm just learning. If I was learning to play the piano, I would make mistakes. No way would I sit down and hit all of the right notes the first time. If I was a baby learning to walk, I would definitely fall down many, 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 many times before I learned to walk. But eventually, the perfect ability to walk comes, right? Well, the same thing with practicing discernment. I promise you that you will make mistakes. I guarantee that you will make mistakes. But it's through the practice, and it's through making mistakes and learning from mistakes, it's through all of that that we eventually get to the point where we are listening to only one voice. In fact, in the course, and again, I'm not good at finding excerpts in the course or quoting exactly, but if somebody else knows what I'm referring to now, feel free to post it in the room and I'll read the exact quote. But in the course, Jesus says something where he talks about the last thing he learned to do in his earthly life was listen to only one voice. Jesus, right, says the last thing he learned to do in his earthly life was listen to one voice, which means he was also practicing and making mistakes. And in fact, I think some of those mistakes are right there in the Bible, and people who want to put Jesus on a pedestal don't see the mistakes. They look away from the mistakes. But I talked about those mistakes not too long ago. Oh, Dove says it's on page 75, so I'll open that up and read it in a moment. But, you know, I talked about those mistakes in another teaching not too long ago where, you know, Jesus had what I called a bad day. Yeah, the fig tree. Jesus had a bad day when he got mad at a fig tree because it didn't have any figs on it, even though it wasn't even the season for figs. The poor little fig tree wasn't even supposed to have figs. But Jesus was hungry, and he went to a fig tree. It had no figs. He got mad. He cursed it, and it died. And then he went to the temple, and that's when the money changers were there, and he got upset, and he turned over the tables, right? So, and he says in the course, the last thing he learned to do was to listen to one voice. So if Jesus made mistakes, sometimes big mistakes, like cursing an innocent fig tree, right? If Jesus made mistakes, don't you think you're going to? You know, don't you think you're going to make mistakes too? So that is not a good reason for being allergic to discernment. Again, discernment is the practice of learning to listen to only one voice. And if you don't even try, the voice that you're left with, the default voice, is ego. So if you don't even take those beginning steps of learning to listen to one voice, you're just going to keep right on listening to ego. And that's not to anyone's benefit. Okay, let's see if I can find the right excerpt. I'm reading from The Voice for God in Chapter 5. I'm reading at paragraph 3, and my eyes landed on sentence 7, so I'm going to start reading there. We'll find out if that's the right place or not as I read. The Holy Spirit is in you in a very literal sense. His is the voice that calls you back to where you were before and will be again. It is possible, even in this world, to hear only that voice and no other. It takes effort and great willingness to learn. It is the final lesson that I learned, and God's sons are as equal as learners as they are as sons. Yeah, listen to what Jesus is saying. He's saying God's sons are as equal as learners as they are as sons. As equal as learners. That says two things. Number one, if Jesus learned to listen to only one voice while walking in this world, I can learn to listen to only one voice while walking in this world. That's one thing it says. But the other thing, he says this is the final lesson he learned. Well, if God's sons are equal as learners, and Jesus made mistakes, and it took a lot of practice and a lot of effort and a lot of willingness for him to learn, that probably means I'm going to make mistakes, and it's going to take a lot of effort and a lot of willingness for me to learn. So instead of being allergic to discernment, Why not just start off by saying, you know what, Jesus screwed up a lot, so will I. And then start learning. Jesus had to put forth a lot of effort, so will I. And then start learning. Right? It took great willingness on Jesus' part. Not a little willingness, great willingness on Jesus' part. And it will take great willingness from me too. And then start learning. You know, see yourself as equal to Jesus. You have the ability to listen to only one voice, and it's going to take a lot of practice, a lot of work. There will be a lot of mistakes, and that's all perfect. That's how you learn to walk too, right? So, today I'm going to talk about discernment. And the only way I know to talk about it is to talk about it as I experienced it, as I continue to experience it. And I learned discernment from within. And one of the places that the within guidance that I received is documented is NTI. So I'm going to be using NTI today as an aid to show you discernment as I learned it. And I'm going to start at NTI Acts, chapter 19, on page 247. Nope, not page 247. Hold on, let me find the right page. It is Acts 19, but no, it is page 247, just the very bottom of the page. So it's about halfway through NTI Acts 19, the bottom of page 247. And I'll just start reading. It says, within you, there is a reason, and reason here means reasoning. Within you, there is a reason that knows, and there is another reason that does not know. It can seem confusing deciding which reasoning to listen to when they seem to be different and they seem to both be yours. Therefore, I will teach you the characteristics of the ego's reasoning, and I will teach you the characteristics of the Holy Spirit's right reason. This will help you to recognize each in your mind. Then you may choose to pick one and to dismiss the other as meaningless. So one thing that's very interesting about this very first paragraph on discernment is that both of these voices seem to be me. You know, it's not like one voice sounds like me and the other voice sounds like God, or one voice sounds like me and the other voice sounds like the devil, right? Both voices sound like me. So I'm going to have to look deeper than that to figure out which voice is which. I'm going to have to look at the foundation of the thought to see what the source is, whether the source of that thought is ego or whether the source of that thought is Holy Spirit. Now, let me just define ego and Holy Spirit a little bit. Ego, as I use it, is the belief in a personal self, the belief in a private mind, the belief in self-will. They're all the same thing. Ego is the belief in a personal self, the belief in a private mind, and the belief in a personal will. That's the ego. Holy Spirit is your inner spiritual intuition that is not at all confused, is fully aware of the truth, knows who you are, does not see you at all as separate from anyone else or anything else. And when it guides, it's really guiding with the perspective of the whole, not the perspective of an individual. Even though it may be individual guidance, the guidance you receive has the perspective of the whole. The next paragraph starts talking about how to recognize the ego's reasoning. The ego's reasoning is based on a desire to protect individual self-will. The ego's reasoning sees a me and a them, and it desires very much, and this is in italics, it desires very much to protect individual self-interests over the interests of others. It may also join with a group to protect the group's interests, but it has always seen the need to protect one from another. So one really common example would be my reputation, right? One thing that all of us are concerned about until we aren't anymore, it's inherent in the ego thought system, is we're concerned about what others think of me, right? We're concerned about my reputation, the perception of me. And so one common way that we listen to ego is by saying things and doing things that really has a concern underneath it about how others see me. And, you know, some of these things can be very, very good things, you know, in the eyes of the world. You know, we can be volunteering on all kinds of projects and helping all kinds of people. But if we look underneath and we find that the reason we're doing it is because we want people to see me as good, see me as spiritual, right? See me as loving. If I'm concerned about how people see me, then really that is coming from ego. So you can't look at the top level always. Sometimes you can, but you can't always look at the top level of what's being said or done and tell whether it's ego or not. You have to go underneath it. You know, like right here in Pal Talk, you know, deciding to come and teach here in the Awakening Together Sanctuary could be spirit's guidance, could be ego. And if I'm coming here to teach because I want you guys to think that I'm wise, I want you to look up to me, maybe I even want you to follow me, right? Then it's totally ego. Whenever self-interest is a part of it, it's ego. And then notice self-interest can be extended to group interest, right? My family is an extension of me. If I'm identified with Awakening Together could become an extension of me. I could want Awakening Together to get more attention and more members than, you know, say David Hoffmeister's church or Tony Ponticello's church or Pathways of Light, right? I could start seeing a sense of competition there because I'm with Awakening Together. So whenever we find that there is a sense of wanting to protect or defend the self or a group that I'm identified with, we are looking at ego. Continuing with sentence 9 on page 248. Therefore, the ego's reasoning sees division and expects attack. Always in one form or another, it expects attack from someone or something outside of it. The ego never expects love and acceptance because the ego does not see itself as worthy of anything except attack. Of course, if I'm just out for me or my groups, the groups I'm identified with, then what that really means is I'm against everyone else, right? I've drawn a line. If I cross that line to help you, it is because of self-interest, if I'm coming from ego, right? So I've drawn a line. I'm all about me and what I'm identified with. That means I've made everything else an enemy. And because I've made everything else an enemy, I'm expecting attack. And one really common way that I noticed this in people, and I noticed it in me before, is when I say, hey, I'd like to talk to you. People automatically jump to the assumption that I'm upset with them and, you know, in some way I'm going to chastise them, which is, I think, never the case, to be honest. But that's the assumption. And why is that the assumption? Because the ego always expects attack. It never expects acceptance and love. You know, so even though I think all that I actually give is acceptance and love, I can't, you know, it's been years, I think, since I'm attacked anyone. And the last one I attacked was my daughter, Jasmine, right? She'll tell you the last time. We both remember that day. Even though I am always accepting and loving, people still expect attack from me. Why? Because their ego is still in charge. It's still ruling their thought system, their thinking. And the ego cannot believe that I would actually accept and love them as they are. So the ego expects attacks. And when I say, can I talk to you? They think, okay, here it comes. And I used to be the same way. My boss at private healthcare systems, for the most part, adored me. She was always telling me what a great job I was doing, et cetera, et cetera. But every time I would get a message that she wanted to see me in the office, there was this, uh-oh, here it comes. Here it comes, you know? And I walked in there time and time again, being wrong, but always expecting it. Moving on to the next paragraph, sentence 12. Because the ego expects attack and has a desire to protect itself from its perceived threat, the ego engages in defense. The defenses of the ego can take many forms, but always there is an underlying desire to protect from attack. The ego may engage in an attack first tactic or a smear campaign. The ego may try to hide or utilize evasive maneuvers. The ego may cry and plead its case as victim, hoping to win outside support. The ego may try to outsmart an opponent or elevate itself to artificial standing. The ego will use many defenses, including denial, depression, and pain. All are designed to protect self-will from imagined or perceived attack. And I'm sure that we can each find ourselves in all of these because, you know, we've all listened to ego, right? So, you know, when it talks about the ego may engage in an attack first tactic or a smear campaign, you know, gossip is a very, very common example. You know, why do people like to get together and gossip about whoever is not there? Whoever it is. Later they'll be with that person gossiping about the others, right? But this is something that humans love to do. Why do humans love to get together and gossip? Well, that's the attack first or smear campaign. If I can make that person look bad, the ego reasons, then I look better. This is how I protect myself from attack, right? By making someone else look bad, making someone else look worse. It's a pure ego defense mechanism. And this is why we love it. Because we believe the ego and we're trying to protect ourselves, right? We're driven by the desire to protect ourselves. Let's see. The ego may cry and plead its case as victim, hoping to win outside support. So, of course, we've probably all done this too, where we tell our story. You know, and we're the innocent victim of the story, and we get everybody to see our side of the story, and everybody to say, oh, you know, poor you, that bad person over there shouldn't have done that, or that bad corporation over there shouldn't be doing that. But, you know, we get lots and lots of people on our side. And that's just another defense technique. The ego may try to outsmart an opponent or elevate itself to artificial standing. So, what page am I on? I'm on page 248, Jackie. And I'm on the paragraph that starts with sentence 14. The ego may try to outsmart an opponent or elevate itself to artificial standing. So, let's say that, you know, I was afraid. I wanted to be the best teacher in the Awakening Together Sanctuary. And I wanted everybody to see me as the best teacher in the Awakening Together Sanctuary. But of course, I'm afraid that I'm not, right? Because I'm coming from ego. So what I might do then is I might actually come in here and start listening to other people. But my purpose for listening is to find out where they're teaching, what they're teaching, so that I can maybe teach superior to them, right? I want to outdo everyone, you know? That would be trying to outsmart, right? I get to know my opponent very, very well. Then I show up with a better idea, a better presentation. I mean, that's my whole purpose. That is the ego. The ego will use many defenses, including denial, depression and pain. This is, you know, the absolute insanity of the ego is when the ego begins to deny that it wants to protect itself. It does. It does see enemies, but now it denies that. It's not acting on it. It's even more sick, believe it or not. And because it's not acting on it, because it's not at least living in harmony with its own beliefs, then that the pain turns inward. The pain turns inward, and there can be depression. There can be, physical pain. It can turn into things like cancer, right? So still having the ego thought system as the primary thought system, but not acting on it, maybe because we've judged it as bad, and denying it, then causes internal problems. We may appear very, very good and very, very well behaved on the outside, but we're suffering within this body because all of the ego thought system is still intact and it's still fighting us and we are fighting it, and there's just an inner war that's going on. Starting with sentence, 19. The ego expects attack because it believes it deserves it. The ego is fearful, sees itself as unworthy, and believes in its own guilt. And those are important sentences because those are maybe the primary characteristics of the ego. The ego is fear, unworthiness, and guilt. And as you know, I think it was last week that I taught the root cause inquiry process. And the way the root cause inquiry process works is that you are upset about something. Maybe you're upset because the fig tree doesn't have figs and you're hungry, right? And so instead of cursing the fig tree, you decide to journal it. And you go and you start asking yourself, you know, why am I upset at the fig tree? Because it's not producing any figs. And you realize that if you had a healed mind, that wouldn't upset you. So you ask, well, then why does that upset me? You know, and you drill down to find out what's there. Often, if the ego thought system is really strong in your mind, often you will drill down and you will find fear, unworthiness, and guilt at the root of your action. That's what's at the bottom. That's what's driving you. In fact, when I first started practicing discernment, I was shocked at how much of my action, it seemed like all of it, to be honest, was based on fear, unworthiness, and guilt. You know, I was living in a town, Acton, Massachusetts, which had a great reputation. Professionals lived there. It had, at the time, the second best school system in the United States, second only to Hollywood, I believe it was. No, not Beverly Hills, second only to Beverly Hills. I literally moved to that town so that I could appear less unworthy than I felt, because I thought if I lived among the type of people that lived in that town, that, you know, their shine would rub off on me. As I started looking at everything that I did, what I found was I was being driven by fear, unworthiness, and guilt. And in fact, I came to realize I didn't even know what decisions I would make or what life I would have if I didn't have fear, unworthiness, and guilt, because they were driving everything, right? Hello, David. Wondering why you aren't at school, but hello. Are you skipping school today? Are you in Pal Talk on your phone in class? All right, so the ego expects attack because it believes it deserves it. Yeah, he's in school but listening on his phone. Shh, don't tell the teacher, everyone. Welcome, David. Okay, the ego expects attack because it believes it deserves it. The ego is fearful, sees itself as unworthy, and believes in its own guilt. These are also characteristics of the ego. It is driven by fear, guilt, and unworthiness, so that it reasons itself into behaviors based solely upon these unconscious beliefs. Like I just described, I lived in Acton because I believed I was unworthy and I didn't want to appear that way, right? The ego is seldom aware of the underlying beliefs that seem to drive all of its reactions and everything it does. So, you know, if the ego thought system is really strong in the mind, again, nearly even who we marry, for God's sakes, who we marry can and probably often does come from fear, unworthiness, or guilt. You know, I think it was Lee Catalano made a post a month or so ago that she had asked how many of her friends had gotten married just so they'd have financial security, and she said the majority of them said yes. Well, isn't that fear? Right? I know people who have gotten married because their partner wanted very, very much to get married. They'd been together for a number of years, and even though this person didn't want to get married, the partner wanted it so much, and out of guilt, they finally did it. And of course, I'm sure there are people, although I don't know of a story personally, I'm sure there are people who feel very unworthy, but they see their partner as light that shines on them. When they're with their partner, they feel less unworthy and they get married for that reason. You know, so, I mean, it just drives our behaviors and we're not even aware of it. We don't know. Like, we would never say, oh, I married him because I felt unworthy and with him I felt better. You know, we would never say that. But yet, that's what's happening, right? That's what's happening. So, again, the ego is driven by fear, guilt, and unworthiness, so that it reasons itself into behaviors based solely upon these unconscious beliefs. The ego is seldom aware of the underlying beliefs that seem to drive all of its reactions and everything it does. This is why you must slow down and ask yourself why. Before running off to an action or reaction that immediately seems right or natural to you, you must seek in quiet to ask yourself why. And you must continue to ask why until you understand the nature of your reason. So this is the same question that we saw in the root cause inquiry that I taught last week, but the purpose here is a little different. In root cause inquiry, we were inquiring down to find out why we were upset. Here, we want to find out why we're about to make the decision we're about to make, or why our habitual behavior is always the habitual behavior that it is. We're inquiring why to find out why we act the way we do. Yeah, we want to find out what our motives are. So the first time that I remember doing this was a very simple process, actually. I don't remember who called me, but somebody called me. and actually, I think this had been going on for a few days. And I kept returning the phone calls, but I never felt good about it. Like, there was no joy about it. I just kept, every time the phone would ring, it was like a burden on my shoulders. And so I decided, it's probably around the time that I was writing this, to be honest, it was in North Carolina. So I decided to inquire into why I was answering the phone and returning phone calls when I clearly didn't want to. And I found that it was guilt. You know, when I asked, why am I doing this? It wasn't a lengthy process. I only had to ask once, why am I returning these phone calls when I don't want to? And the answer was, what'll they think of you? I'm like, oh, there we go. You know, the only reason I'm returning phone calls or answering the phone when I don't feel to is because I'm concerned about what other people will think of me if I don't, right? A good person answers the phone and a good person returns phone calls. At least that's what I thought. So I made a promise to myself. I made a promise that before I answered the phone or before I returned a phone call, I was going to check. If the only reason I was answering the phone or returning the phone call was guilt, I was going to not do it. Because I wanted to stop listening to the voice of guilt. And this was my starting point. And the funny thing is, maybe because this was my starting point, once I made this decision, an enormous amount of fear came up. You know, again, the ego was really protecting itself by answering the phone and returning phone calls. And now that I had decided I would never do that out of guilt again, I would only do it if it felt, I call it clean, right? Like, it feels clean. There's nothing here. But I would never do it out of guilt again. The ego got extremely fearful, and a lot of fear came up. A lot of fear about reputation. What would other people think of me? Would I be cut off from social circles forever, end up alone, right? All, am I bad for doing this? All of that fear came up. But I stuck to it. Because it was more important to me that I learned to listen to one voice. And I knew that even something as simple as returning a phone call out of guilt was keeping me addicted to the ego voice. And so I stopped. And to this day, I do not return phone calls out of guilt. If I'm, you know, like saying in contemplation and the phone rings and I feel just to let it ring and not answer it, I don't answer it. If I'm playing a game with Jasmine or eating dinner, and the phone rings and I feel not to do it, keep playing the game or keep eating dinner, I don't. Only now I do it in a very, very free way. You know, because I've, you could say, purified through that belief. But again, even very simple things that we do out of fear, guilt, and unworthiness. And so through living our life in that way, we are reinforcing our addiction to the ego voice. And how can we continually reinforce our addiction to the ego voice and listen only to the Holy Spirit? Somewhere we have to start letting go. We have to see, I'm only doing this because of guilt. I'm only doing this because of fear. I'm only doing this because I believe I'm unworthy. I'm only doing this because I'm trying to defend myself. And we have to stop. Another place where I really let go was when NTI was published and on the Peace of God, a smear campaign started. But the target of the smear campaign was NTI and Regina Dawn Akers. And even some of my friends, people I perceived as my friends, were involved in that. And it was very difficult not to get involved in one way or another, not to, you know, respond with a post saying, that's not true, here's the truth, or not call the friends and say, what the heck are you doing? You know me better than that, right? But my guidance through that entire period, which the way I remember it is it lasted about 6 months, my guidance was to do nothing. Do nothing. Do not respond to a single email, a single post. Do not call my friends and ask what they're doing. You know, just nothing. And that's because I was learning not to be addicted to the ego voice. When you're addicted to defending yourself, you're addicted to the ego voice. And the best way to break an addiction is complete abstinence, right? If I every now and then went in and defended, you know, you know, like, okay, not on Tuesday, not on Wednesday, but Thursday, that one I'll defend. I wouldn't have let go of the addiction. I had to abstain completely. And I had to allow these people to write anything they wanted to write about me, anything they wanted to write about NTI, and not get involved at all. And why did I do that? Because I wanted to break my addiction to listening to the ego voice, and I knew from NTI that defense is ego. Defense is ego, and I could feel that energy of defense in me. I wanted to defend. So, I'm going to start with sentence 19 again. The ego expects attack because it believes it deserves it. The ego is fearful, sees itself as unworthy, and believes in its own guilt. These are also characteristics of the ego. It is driven by fear, guilt, and unworthiness, so that it reasons itself into behaviors based solely upon these unconscious beliefs. The ego is seldom aware of the underlying beliefs that seem to drive all of its reactions and everything it does. This is why you must slow down and ask yourself why. Before running off to an action or reaction that immediately seems right or natural to you, you must seek in quiet to ask yourself why. And you must continue to ask why until you understand the nature of your reason. Now, this worked very, very well for me, this asking why. But I have seen people that it didn't. I've seen people that it got them tied up into knots. And the only answer I have for that was because they didn't know the difference between their I'm getting some distracting messages. Someone is saying, help, help. Someone is trying to kill me, and I'm trying not to look at those messages. They're coming from Facebook, but they're distracting me a little bit. But notice out of guilt, I'm not going to run over to Facebook and check it out. I'm just going to let it be and stay here. So some people have trouble with the why, because when the why happens, they believe I am bad so much that they assume from the very beginning that their reason must be bad, right? If I am bad, my reason must be bad. And so what happens when they start asking why, instead of asking why from an open place, trying to discover the reason, they have a premeditated reason, and now they're just trying to prove it to themselves. You know, they've already decided, even before they asked why, it must be bad. Now let me find the bad reason I'm doing this, right? So if you want the why to work, if you want to really find out why you're doing things, then you need to know that A, you're moved by ego a lot, but B, you aren't moved just by ego. No one is. When we talk about learning to listen to only one voice, notice we don't even have to specify the voice we're talking about is Holy Spirit. Because you can never listen only to ego. That's impossible. It is impossible because of who you are. That's why we say it's a split mind, right? Not a lost mind. A split mind. So, if you don't know your motivation, you don't know your motivation. And so you need to ask why with an openness to discover. And if you ask why with the assumption, I'm bad, my motivation must be bad, the why thing isn't going to work for you. You're going to find yourself making up motivations even when they're not there. But if you're very, very open and you begin to ask why, you know, like let's say you have two jobs in front of you. You've been looking for work and there are two jobs in front of you. And you're thinking about calling this guy and accepting this job and you say, you know what? I'm just going to ask why. I'm going to look at this. I'm going to ask why. Why do I want this job? You might hear it's more money. It's easier. Less likely you'll fail. You say, ooh, then I got to wait a minute because those all sound like ego reasons, right? I need to look at this again. You know, what about this job? Does it have the same things behind it? And you need to stop and kind of look. But you might have two jobs in front of you. And you might be thinking of accepting this job from this guy. And you say, why do I want to accept this job? And you might find literally nothing. I just feel to. That's what I call spirit. It's clean. You see, spirit doesn't come with the why. It's ego that has all the stories. Spirit is clean. It's funny because right reason is almost the same as no reason. Just I feel to. And so, you know, often when people tell me, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I feel to, you know, I definitely encourage them because I say, well, then that's spirit. If you really have looked for why and you don't know why, you just feel it, go for it. That's what I call a clean prompt. But if you can find all these stories underneath why you're about to do something and you notice those stories are all about my self-will, expecting attack, protection, defense, guilt, fear, unworthiness. If you find these things underneath it, if you really want to throw yourself into discernment, I would recommend not doing that thing. Now, it's funny because NTI started this by saying that we're going to learn the ego's reasoning and we're going to learn the right reasoning so that you'll recognize each in your mind. And then the sentence says, then you may choose to pick one and dismiss the other as meaningless. Spirit is saying you can choose whichever one you want. If there's a lot of guilt under a decision you're about to make, but you just don't feel ready to face not making that decision, and you want to make a decision out of guilt, knowing you're making a decision out of guilt, then go right ahead. At least you know what you're doing. At least you're not being fooled or deceived. So discernment, again, is about learning what thoughts within you are coming from the ego source and what thoughts within you are clean and peaceful, as Christina has written. Which thoughts are clean? What I chose to do was I chose to not follow ego thoughts and only follow clean thoughts. That's what I chose to do. And as a result, a lot of purification did happen because that brought up a lot of fears. You know, once you choose not to follow ego, ego has all of these great stories about what's going to happen to you because you aren't following ego. And you have to learn to realize that's just more fear. You know, that's just more guilt. That's just more unworthiness. I'm not listening to that. I'm not listening to that. You know, let that leave me now, right? But at some point, what happens is you start to have a sense of freedom, authenticity, genuineness in who you are as a human. And you don't feel at all selfish, which is funny. You see, selfishness comes from self-will, right? Selfishness comes from the belief that you want things a certain way. And when you're following spirit, following intuition, you know, only following the clean prompts, you know you're being moved. You know you're doing what you are to do. So even though you may be doing things like not returning phone calls and telling people no, stuff you never used to do, you know, you used to always return the phone calls and always say yes. Now you're not returning phone calls and you're telling people no, but you don't feel selfish because you know you're being authentic and following that intuitive energy, right? David says, do you have any advice for me if I am choosing to follow guilt even though I'm aware? I still have an idea of what's best, and I want to do or have what is best, so I follow the guilt. Yeah, my recommendation is if you follow the guilt, observe. Is that working for you? That's what you want to do. You just want to observe. You know, it's like an experiment. Are you getting to peace, joy, happiness, the feeling of freedom I just spoke of, being authentic? Is that working for you? One thing the Course says is that Holy Spirit teaches through contrast. One thing that I started this talk with, David, which you weren't here yet for, because I'm sure you were paying attention in class, not listening to me. But one thing I started this with is you will make mistakes in this process. You will make mistakes. Sometimes you make them by accident. Oh, he says he's done in class. Sometimes you may make them by accident, and sometimes you may just, I mean, I'm describing it from how it felt within myself, but sometimes you may just not feel strong enough not to listen to ego, like you're too afraid not to listen to ego. You're still attached to ego's stories too much, and you believe ego when ego says something bad's going to happen if you don't do it this way. And so you go with ego, even though you know it's ego, because you're just too scared not to, right? And that's also a mistake, but it's more of a conscious mistake. And so what you do is you pay attention. You say, okay, so I chose to do this. I realize I consciously chose to follow this voice. Now, it promised me that if I came this way, that this would be the right way to go. But is that true? You know, is that true? Am I free by following the ego's voice? And eventually what you'll find is that you're not free. You may appear free if you look in small, small increments. Because, for example, if we're talking about returning a phone call out of guilt, you may return the phone call and you may feel a temporary, I'm free now because now this person doesn't think I'm a loser. I returned my phone call. I was good. You say, okay, I'm glad I did that. But then the situation is going to recur. See, the guilt is not healed. And your whole life, there'll be another situation that you feel guilty about and another situation that you feel guilty about. And so if you really observe, you're going to notice that as long as you're believing the voice of fear, guilt, or unworthiness, right, you're going to continue to experience fear, guilt, and unworthiness. You're never free. You may feel temporarily better, but you're never free. When you go through the process of not listening to that voice, in the beginning, it may seem worse. That's the funny thing. In the beginning, then all the fear comes up because you're not doing what the ego wants you to do. And just, it gets, well, exaggeratedly terrible. I don't know how else to say it. You know, like, oh my God, it'd have been so much better if I had just returned that phone call, right? I wouldn't have to be feeling all of this. But what happens is if it comes up and you go through it in a purification way, which means you understand all that's happening, is that all of this is coming up because you're not believing it and you've believed it before and it's fighting for survival and you're just going to do nothing but rest, accept, and trust and stick with your decision to only follow one voice, right? You do all of that. Eventually, all of that leaves you. And you're no longer motivated by fear, guilt, and unworthiness, and you are free. So what we're really talking about here is an addiction. And so we can compare it to an addiction. You know, if you were addicted to heroin, right? You're addicted to heroin. Let's all imagine ourselves addicted to heroin. Maybe a couple of us don't even have to imagine. Maybe we've been there. You want to quit heroin, but you start feeling bad, right? You start feeling real bad. You start getting sick. And then you get sicker. And the mind's telling you if you just had some heroin, you'd feel better, right? And so you go and you shoot up. Ah, you feel better, right? Oh, I'm so glad I did that. I'm not sick anymore. But you're also not free. And when that high wears off, what starts happening? You start needing more heroin, okay? And if you don't, you get sick. And so you go and you shoot up again, and you're addicted to heroin as long as you go for the temporary feeling better. But when the day finally comes that you really want to quit heroin, you get sick. And you get sicker and sicker. And you're sicker than you've ever been before. So sick that you think you might die, right? But you stay with it because now you're really ready to quit heroin. So it gets far worse than it's ever been before. Exaggeratedly worse. But then at some point, the addiction leaves you. And now you're free. Now you don't need heroin. Now you can live your life without heroin. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. So if you choose not to listen to the voice of guilt, fear, and unworthiness, at first it may seem to get worse, just like when you're quitting heroin. But if you stay with your decision, right, rest, accept, and trust through it, it leaves you. And then you're free. So again, the ego is seldom aware of the underlying beliefs that seem to drive all of its reactions and everything it does. This means that most of us, if we've not practiced discernment before, we don't even know why we're doing the things we're doing. This is why you must slow down and ask yourself why. Before running off to an action or reaction that immediately seems right or natural to you, you must seek in quiet to ask yourself why. And you must continue to ask why until you understand the nature of your reason. The ego is the nature that desires to protect you from attack based on its fear, guilt, and unworthiness. If you find these at the basis of your reason, you can know you are reasoning for self-will and the individual, or reasoning for the ego. Listen to what Holy Spirit says next. Then you can make your choice as you choose, knowing what it is that you do. So if you're not ready to give up heroin, at least you know that this is heroin, right? If you're not ready to give up ego, at least you know you're taking another hit of ego. You're conscious of what you're doing. And it's helpful to be conscious of what you're doing, even if you're still doing it, because then you start observing it differently, right? Now you can observe the effects and see, is this getting me freedom? Is this getting me what I want? And even if you continue to make choices based on ego, if you're now doing it consciously, you're probably going to start seeing it differently. And that will eventually lead to where you're going to say, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. I see how it's hurting me now, and I'm not interested in that. So if you find fear, guilt, or unworthiness at the basis of your reason, You can know you are reasoning for self-will and the individual. Then you can make your choice as you choose, knowing what it is that you do. You need not feel guilty for your choice, because the Son of God is free to choose as he chooses to be. So if you consciously choose ego, that is not bad. You are free to do that for as long as you think it serves you. And then when the point comes where you realize it doesn't serve you, then you can start making different choices. All right, so now we're going to start looking at the characteristics of the right reason of the Holy Spirit. The characteristics of the right reason of the Holy Spirit are wholly different than the characteristics of the reason of the ego. If you take time to seek for why before acting or reacting to anything or anyone at any time, you can know the reason that you follow, and you can know the will that you choose. This is an interesting sentence, sentence 32. If you take time to seek for why before acting or reacting to anything or anyone at any time, you can know the reason that you follow, and you can know the will that you choose. What I found, again, is that it got to be pretty easy to check why. It got to be something that I could do in an instant before I answered a question, for example, in the middle of a conversation. Again, in order for checking why am I doing this, in order for that to work, you can't have an assumption that you're bad, right? You have to know that sometimes you're moved by ego, sometimes you're moved by spirit. You don't know which it is right now, and you're checking to see before you respond. It has to be that clean of a check. But, you know, let's say someone is saying, hey, Regina, we would love for you to start teaching in Pal Talk on Friday nights. You know, you've never taught on Friday night. We'd love to have you here on Friday night. Can you do that? And my first response is, no, that's time I spend with my family. But then before I say it, I check. You know, why do I want to give this response? Well, if I want to give it because I feel very guilty and I'm worried about my family getting angry, I may want to reconsider that decision. Or maybe I, you know, afraid enough of my family getting angry that I still want to listen to that decision, even though I know I'm doing it out of guilt. Or I might check, and I might just find this clean feeling, you know, my family has requested this, and I just feel to honor it. It's very clean. It's not guilt. It's just what I feel to do. And I say, you know, no. You know, then I go ahead with my no. So there were really three possible choices there as I checked my no. Again, the question is, Regina, this is a made-up question, nobody's asked. But the question is, Regina, do you want to teach in Pal Talk on Friday nights? You've never done that. We'd love to have you. And what I know I want to say is no. I already know that. I want to say no. But now I'm checking why. Option A, I see that I feel guilty. I'm worried my family will be upset, and I'm scared of their reaction. Now, once I see that, I still have two choices. A, I say, okay, I'm gonna go ahead and teach because this is ego and I do not want to listen to ego. So yes, I'll teach. Or I say, I am afraid of their reaction and I would rather listen to this guilt because that feels better to me. And I go ahead and listen to guilt. Okay. So those are two choices there. I can make whichever one I want. That's what this is telling me. Whichever one I want, but at least I know what I'm doing here. I'm making this choice because I'm afraid of my family's reaction. And that's what I want to do, right? Or I'm going to teach because I don't want to listen to the voice of ego. And I need to break this addiction. So I'm going to teach, and I know that I'm probably going to have a lot of fear coming up and stuff, but I'm doing this anyway because I'm ready to let go of ego. Or the third thing that could happen is I could check, and there could be a very honest, now my family's requested that I don't, and I just feel it feels best to honor that request. I don't feel guilty or anything, but it just feels best to honor their request, right? And so it's a very clean no. And this is how this works. And again, as I said at the beginning of the talk, you're going to make mistakes. But through this process of checking to see if ego's underneath it or if it's clean, this is at least how I have trained myself to listen to only one voice. Now, I can't say I listen to only one voice 100% consistently. That would be a lie, so I'm still training myself. But if we look at this relative compared to where I was when I began and where I am now, it's like night and day. It's like night and day. I do listen to only one voice the vast, vast majority of the time. And used to, that wasn't true. I was listening to ego in almost everything I did. And this is the exact process that helped me switch. Now hold on one moment. Jamie wants out, and then I will come back and continue the reading. Okay, let's see. This is what Energizer is writing. If I say something here on Pal Talk and no one responds to me, the ego rears up and starts up with fear and unworthiness, and then tells me that no one responds to me because it was ego that motivated me to say something in the first place. So then I believe it. Yeah. And I start to beat myself up internally for speaking out of ego motivation in the first place. Yeah, so that's what I call a spiral downward. You know, you listen to the first ego idea and believe it, ego just takes you further, you know. So now you're bad, 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 right? Just it takes you down as far as it can take you. So, yeah. And so you can see this is an addiction that doesn't really serve. And that's, again, why we want to learn to practice discernment. Practicing discernment is all about breaking the addiction of listening to ego and learning to listen to only spirit, only one voice. And remember how I started this hour? We were reading where Jesus talked about how he did this in A Course in Miracles, and he said it took great effort and great willingness, and it was the last thing he learned, right? Great effort, great willingness, last thing he learned. So we can expect the same thing. He then also said we're all equal as learners. So we can expect the same thing. So it's going to take great effort, great willingness, right? And it may take a lot of time. And as I mentioned, even something as simple as choosing not to return phone calls out of guilt took great willingness. Just like it would take great willingness to stop heroin if you were addicted. It takes great willingness because there is like an ego backlash, you know, because you have been making yourself feel better. Just like you make yourself feel better when you take heroin, you have been making yourself feel better by following the ego. You're getting the temporary fix. This is what you've been doing forever, forever, forever. And now you're stopping the temporary fix. And when you stop the temporary fix, all of the fears, all of the guilt, all of the unworthiness that was repressed by those fixes starts to come up. So it can get very loud, very dark, very scary, right? Just like quitting heroin would be very, very difficult. You get very, very sick. But again, if you don't go back to the fix, eventually that moves through you and you're free. You're free. So it's helpful if you see it as letting go of an addiction. And don't expect it to be easy and realize you'll make mistakes. But I'm here to tell you it works, and I'm speaking from experience. So, returning to the reading. Starting on page 249. Starting with sentence 33. The Holy Spirit is love. But since love is unfamiliar to you, this may not be the characteristic you can know and follow. And that's an interesting sentence because what this is really saying is if this discussion only went as far as to say you'll know the Holy Spirit because it's love, we'd still walk around listening to ego because we don't know what love is. We would mess up. You know, because love would say yes to this person, even though I don't really feel like I want to do that, right? That's what love would do. Love would say yes. Love would let this person take advantage of me, even though I know they're taking advantage of me and it's not to my benefit or theirs. Love would keep saying yes. We are so confused about love. You know, love does say no. Some of you probably know the story of when I used to have a stalker. You may be aware of that because it happened right here in this room, among other places. And at one point, that situation got pretty bad, where there were even the appearances of him threatening to kill me, and you know, definitely he told me on the phone that he wanted to beat me up, and you know, I mean, it got pretty bad. It got kind of scary. And eventually it petered out. But do you know how it got to be so bad? Is because the first time when this guy started contacting me, I had the internal prompt not to respond. Not to respond to his emails. But then the voice of guilt showed up, and it said something like, you know, in order to be spiritual, you need to respond. You respond to everybody else's emails. You need to treat this brother the same way you treat all of the other brothers, right? You can't single him out and treat him differently. That's not spiritual. And so I responded. And I fell for that trick for 2 years. And I responded to phone calls and I responded to emails, always saying no to his advances, always being clear and polite and spiritual, but responding. And it got bad. It got really, really bad. And when I got scared enough, you know, when I literally thought that he was going to kill me, and I asked again, Spirit very gently reminded me that I was a part of this too. And that if I wanted this situation to change direction, I needed to take myself out of the situation and stop responding. Right? It was the very first guidance I received. Stop responding. And by now I was scared enough to listen. I had learned, you know, through my mistake, that love says no. Love sometimes does not answer a phone call or does not respond to an email. Love doesn't always say yes. And see, I had thought love always says yes. See, so we're so confused about love that this book cannot tell us Holy Spirit is love and you will recognize Holy Spirit in that way because we're too damn screwed up about love. So the book says the Holy Spirit is love, but since love is unfamiliar to you, this may not be the characteristic you can know and follow. So screw love, you know, because we can't discern love. We're too confused to discern love. So we need some other characteristics that will help us to discern whether it's Holy Spirit or not. So sentence 34 continues. Therefore, the characteristics of love are these. Now the first one is peace. Now that's a very, very interesting characteristic, peace. Because you don't actually feel emotionally peaceful always when it's Holy Spirit. You may feel very, very afraid. But the reason you're very, very afraid is because ego is also talking. So for example, if I feel the nudge from Spirit not to respond to the emails, right? That happens in a nanosecond, and in that nanosecond there is peace. When I hear that prompt, do not respond, there's nothing but peace around that. The problem is it takes a nanosecond for that prompt to happen. And the minute the prompt stops, I go back to listening to ego, and ego starts talking about, oh, what's this person going to say if you don't answer the email, blah, blah, and my fear arises. And I forget about the nanosecond of peace, right? And if I start thinking, wow, there's so much fear around this, Spirit is supposed to be peace, maybe I am supposed to answer the email, I confuse myself. So we have to realize that if I'm feeling fear now, it's because I'm listening to ego now. And so let's follow this example. Let's say there's an email that comes in, and in a nanosecond of peace, I feel don't respond. And then the ego voice starts, and I'm getting really, really scared about not responding. I need to ask, what am I listening to now? What's scaring me? Is it the thought, don't respond, that's scaring me? Or is it all these thoughts about what's going to happen if I don't respond? You know, what is really scaring me? So sometimes we have to be so discerning. And the truth is, in the beginning, it's difficult to be that subtle. But if you practice discernment, just start at the beginning and start practicing discernment to the best of your ability to get very, very subtle about discernment comes, right? Everything comes with practice. So the actual prompt coming from what we call Holy Spirit always comes in peace. But it could be followed by a barrage of fear, because then you immediately turned your ear to the ego and what the ego thinks of this. But peace definitely is always there while the Spirit is talking, right? In the moment that it's nudging. Spirit would never say, for example, and of course, most of us won't even experience Spirit as words. It's an intuition. So when I say, and I put it in words, that's because that's the only way to express it. But chances are, you won't hear words. You'll just feel an intuitive prompt. But because silence is intelligent, and because you are the Son of God, and you know that intelligence, you know that language, you know the language of silence. You intuitively know the language of silence. You will understand the intelligent, silent prompt. We call that intuition. And you can put it into words. And you can say, Spirit said to me, even though you never heard a word. Spirit communicated with you in silence, and you know that language, right? You know that language. And then you put it into words. So, Spirit would never say to you things like, boy, if you respond to that email, he's going to kill you. See, that's fear. If you respond to that email, he's going to kill you. Don't respond or he's going to kill you. Spirit would never say that. Spirit just says, don't respond, in a very peaceful way. Spirit would never say, oh, if you loan that guy your money, you're never going to see it again. Don't loan that guy your money. Because again, that's fear. But Spirit might just say, no. When he asked for the loan. You don't even know why. You just feel no, right? You don't need a story. And Spirit never gives a story. So Spirit is capable of yes and no. Spirit is capable of guiding you to actions that other people will define as love and other people will define as rudeness, right? Not caring. But Spirit always knows what's in everyone's best interest. And that spiritual prompt, the true inner intuition that is Spirit, will come in a nanosecond of peace without a story. And if you learn to tune in to the nanosecond, you'll notice, I don't know why, but I'm to say no here. And you may feel fear because you've never said no before. You may feel fear because you don't know what people are going to think of you. But if you stick with what you knew in that nanosecond of peace, you're following intuition, you're following guidance. Yeah, Jim is saying, Spirit often tells me to be still when the ego demands that I defend myself. Exactly, I totally agree with that, Jim. Yeah, just be still. Do nothing. Stay quiet. You know, another common thing is Spirit often tells me to listen to people. Because, you know, the mind wants to start thinking while somebody else is talking. And Spirit reminds me to listen. Give my full attention to this person. But again, Spirit is very short, no story, nanosecond, peace. And it does say yes and it does say no. Okay, I'll be right back. Jamie wants in. Okay, we're back. let's see. Okay, so again, starting with sentence 33, the Holy Spirit is love, but since love is unfamiliar to you, this may not be the characteristic you can know and follow. Therefore, the characteristics of love are these. The first one was peace. The second one, acceptance. What that means is spirit always, always, without exception, accepts the situation exactly as it is. Spirit never says, you shouldn't have done that, you shouldn't have came here, you shouldn't have said that, they shouldn't do that, they shouldn't have come here, they shouldn't have said that. Spirit never judges the situation, no matter what it is. Even in the extreme situation that I found myself in, where there was a stalker that I really feared would kill me, right? Spirit never said, well, he needs to change, you know. Spirit never said, he needs to change, he shouldn't be doing this. Spirit didn't tell me, I told you not to return those emails. Spirit accepts the situation exactly as it is and guides from there. In that way, and I know you've heard this a million times. Ooh, I'm getting a lot of texts. In that way, and I know you've heard this a million times, spirit is just like a GPS, right? Your GPS never says to you, you turn left, I told you to turn right, now you've got us all screwed up and I've got to get us out of here, right? GPS doesn't talk like that, at least the ones they've created so far. Someone with a sense of humor might create a GPS like that. But so far, they don't do that. You know, if the GPS says take right and for some reason you're in the wrong lane and you take a left, you know, the GPS just says, all right, take the next right. Or, you know, turn around as soon as possible, right? It accepts, this is where we're at. And now here's what we do. Yeah, recalculating. Spirit is the same way. Spirit accepts everything. You could have made mistake upon mistake upon mistake upon mistake to get yourself in this situation. Spirit still accepts, okay, this is where we're at. So it always comes from acceptance of the situation. So if there's any judgment in the situation at all, judgment of you, judgment of others, judgment of the weather, judgment of anything, then it's ego that's talking right now. Spirit accepts everything. Spirit doesn't judge at all. Spirit would never judge you. The one that's judging you, telling you that you're an idiot, you got yourself into this situation, that's ego. Spirit accepts the situation and guides from here. Perfect, loving, peaceful acceptance, without exception. So, the first characteristic is peace. The second characteristic is acceptance. The third characteristic is joy. Now, the joy is something that may not be immediately noticeable to you. The joy comes, I'm going to say, after the purification. Again, if you go back to the heroin addict, you know, you are going to be joyous when you're no longer addicted to heroin, right? But during the process of becoming unaddicted, there may not be a lot of joy. You know, you're going to be very, very, very sick. And the same thing can happen in letting go of the ego addiction. So the joy is what comes when you've let go of the ego addiction. The joy is what you know when you're listening to only the spirit. But if you're doing like David talked about earlier, when David said, well, what happens if I want to listen to the guilt, right? And I said, you can do that, but just observe what happens. And you can do that for a year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and just keep asking, have I gotten to constant joy yet? Is this working for me? Is this taking me to joy? And the answer is going to be no. But when you start listening to Holy Spirit instead of ego, although you will go through DTs, you'll start noticing at some point once the DTs pass that you feel this release, you feel relieved, you feel joyous, you're happy not to be addicted to that anymore. So you're going to get to the joy by following spirit, but you may have to go through DTs first. This next characteristic was one that was always important for me, very, very clear for me. This characteristic is recognition or remembrance. What that means is something in me knows that this is the right thing to say or do or to not say or not do. I mean, something in me knows that this prompt is right for me now and right for everyone. Something knows that if I go against this prompt, I'm not serving my best interests. And it's not the thinking mind that knows, because the thinking mind pretty much always argues against whatever spirit is saying, right? So the thinking mind is telling you why that is not the best thing for you and blah, 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 blah. But something in here knows. It's the right answer. It's right for me not to return this email. You know, it knows. So that recognition or that remembrance is something to really pay attention to, your own inner knowing. And everything else in you may be fighting it, but you know, this is, I really shouldn't be returning this email. I can feel it. In fact, you might even find yourself getting the prompt not to return an email. Then the fear comes up. What are they going to think? So you start returning it. But while you're typing, somehow there's this lingering feeling about the prompt. It's not a judgment. It's just a lingering feeling. That's the remembrance of the prompt. This lingering feeling that I shouldn't be doing this. I shouldn't be doing this. And then before you finish it, thank God, you go, you know what? I'm not going to do it. And you delete the email, right? That's the remembrance. It's the lingering feeling of the prompt. And it's not a feeling of guilt. It's just a feeling of, I know this is not what I should be doing. This is not in my best interest. This is not in anybody's best interest. And I say, Cindy, I see Cindy saying yes. So apparently she's noticed that lingering feeling. And in fact, there have been a number of times where I have missed a prompt the first time it came. Like I didn't capture it. I didn't notice it in the nanosecond. But because it lingered, because of the remembrance, eventually I caught on and I changed my course of action. So there may be a recognition of the nanosecond, or there may be a remembrance, a lingering of that. It just doesn't go away. The feeling doesn't go away. And so eventually you surrender to it. But again, it's not guilt. It's not fear. You know, I've had a number of people over the years try and talk me into agreeing with them. That's literally what they're doing. Try and talk me into agreeing with them when fear was driving them. You know, a fear of... I got to make up a story because I can't even remember an actual story, but fear of, you know, loaning the brother $10,000, fear I'll never see that $10,000 again. And so fear is saying, you know, you'll never see that again. Don't loan it. And they're like, this has to be spirit because it just won't go away. I'm being told that if I loan it, I'll never see it again. But it has to be spirit telling me not to do it. And I'll say, that doesn't sound like spirit to me. That sounds like fear. No, it has to be spirit because it won't go away. But, you know, the way they're describing it, you can tell it's fear. It has a whole story around it. If I give it to him, he's not going to give it back, blah, 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 blah. The lingering feeling of spirit is different. In fact, the lingering feeling of spirit in a story like that might even be loan the money and don't worry about it. And it's not saying don't worry about it, you'll get it back. It's saying just don't worry about it. Whether you get it back or not, loaning the money is the best thing to do. You know, that might be the real lingering feeling, and that's why you're trying to get Regina to agree with you, is because you're trying to get someone else to agree with you so you can ignore the lingering feeling that's under your fear. Because the lingering feeling is saying loan, and the fear is saying don't. And so again, it takes discernment to learn the difference between the lingering feeling and the fear. But actually, it's not that hard if you just start looking. Because the fear has a whole story. The fear is very loud, right? The lingering feeling that isn't going away is there, but somehow it's quiet. It's there in a very quiet, peaceful way underneath everything ego's doing. Yeah, So that knowingness, that may be a recognition or it may be a remembrance, that to me is one of the clearest symbols of all, that it's spirit. So the Holy Spirit is love, but since love is unfamiliar to you, this may not be the characteristic you can know and follow. Therefore, the characteristics of love are these: peace, acceptance, joy, recognition or remembrance, and then it says, and always the purpose of one. Now, just like you may not know love, you do not know love. You also do not know the purpose of one. So this is just where you can put your trust. If you are noticing that you have an intuition that is telling you to say no, and the other person is, you know, telling you how awful you were, if you love me, you do this and blah, 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 but you're still feeling no. If you don't do this for me, this is going to happen. It's going to be all your fault. My whole life is ruined, and you're still feeling no. You can trust that this no is in the best interest of the one that's standing right in front of you fighting also. Because Spirit never does anything just for you. Spirit's not saying no because it keeps you safe. Spirit is saying no because it's in your best interest, this person's best interest, and the best interest of anyone else who would ever be touched by the situation. That's why I said when you learn to follow Spirit, you don't have a feeling of selfishness, right? Because you're not being selfish. You're following a guidance that is not from the selfish you. You're following a universal guidance. And again, Spirit doesn't come with a story. So Spirit doesn't say, well, when you say no, sure, he's going to go through this and this and this, but eventually this will happen and that's in his best interest, even though it's 5 years down. You know, Spirit doesn't tell you how your no is the right answer. So you have to put trust here. You have to know when I'm saying no, because it's coming from that intuition, this no is in everyone's best interest, because that's the only way Spirit operates. There are no losers when we follow Spirit. There are no losers. Everyone's best interest is at heart. And in fact, starting with sentence 35, you will not find division within the purpose of the Holy Spirit. Right reason will not come to you from a desire for defense. It will come from a willingness to trust. Now, this paragraph is helping us again practice discernment. Like I said a moment ago, people have come to me and tried to get me to agree with them when they were trying to ignore their lingering feeling and wanting to believe their fear. And they wanted me to agree that the fear was Holy Spirit. You know, that happens in us. Again, that, you know, we're addicts, for God's sakes. We are addicted to ego. If you were addicted to heroin or addicted to alcohol or addicted to anything, you know, something in you is fighting to get that fix, right? So we are addicted to ego, and so something in us is going to fight for that fix, and it's going to try and reason that what is ego is Holy Spirit, right? It's going to do that. So you have to be willing. Remember, Jesus said it takes great effort and great willingness. You have to be willing to get very, very subtle, very, very honest. You really have to want to listen to one voice more than anything else. That's it. This has to be the primary purpose of everything you do, because you want to learn to listen to only one voice. But this next paragraph is helping us recognize some of these tricks that are trying to get us to take an ego fix, right? And so it's saying, right reason will not come to you from a desire for defense. So what this is saying is that the ego reasoning is somehow going to try and convince us at some point, you know, I'm defending myself here, sure, but that's because this person, it's really helpful to them if they understand this. You know, like the ego tries to turn it around, you know? This person really needs to see this. It's helpful for them. So it's defense, but yeah, it's for a good reason. And this says, right reason will not come to you from a desire for defense. It will come from a willingness to trust. You know what that means? That means trusting that if this person needs to see this, they'll see it in another way. I don't need to point it out to them by defending myself, right? Trusting. The universe has other ways to communicate. You know, maybe this person is really wrong about me, but I don't need to defend myself to this person. I can let them walk off with their ideas, and if they need to see it differently, something else will come up. Some other way this will come around, and they'll see it differently. I can trust the situation as it is. You see the difference? Ego is crafty. You know, golly, this person, they misunderstand you. It would be in their best interest if they understood you. You're only trying to help them. Go ahead and explain that you would never do that. Go ahead, defend yourself. It's in their best interest. Spirit, it's all right. Let them go. Be still. You see? That's the difference between ego and spirit. So, right reason will not come to you from a desire for defense, ever. That's always ego, no matter what kind of a spiritual spin is put on it. Right reason will come from a willingness to trust, even when the situation in the ego's point of view is very, very wrong. This is very, very wrong. It needs to be fixed. Spirit accepts it, trusts it. Everything works out in the end. That used to be something Ramana Maharshi used to say all the time when people would bring him these problems that appeared to be very, very wrong and appeared to need fixing. Something needs to be done. He would say, everything works out in the end. Right? Everything works out in the end. That's spirit. Let it run its course. Spirit will not come from fear, but from faith that the plan of love is in action. And as I mentioned, I have had people try and get me to agree with them that their fear was spirit because they were afraid. I mean, that's what was going on. They were afraid. If they didn't listen to this, something bad was going to happen. But spirit never comes to you with that feeling, if you don't listen to this, something bad is going to happen. That feeling, if you don't listen to this, something bad is going to happen, that's always ego. Spirit never, ever, ever comes in that way. It doesn't have that fear judgment in it. It's impossible for spirit. So that fear judgment feeling of if you don't do this, something bad is going to happen, that's ego. Spirit does just have, again, an open faith in all things. An open faith that everything that is happening is perfect. Everything is flowing the way it's supposed to. Everything will work out in the end, as Ramana Maharshi says. So when you're coming from the spirit side of your mind, even though things may appear to be heading for disaster, if you're really listening to only one voice, you're watching, and there's something in you saying, huh, I wonder how this is going to work out. You know, like, oh, I wonder how this is going to end. In a very peaceful way. It's not the one saying, oh no, oh no, oh no. You know, that's ego. Spirit knows everything is under control always. Everything is working out and, you know, everything is moving in the right direction. Everything is going to work out in the end always. And Ramana Maharshi expressed that very clearly over and over again. So again, right reason will not come to you from a desire for defense. It will come from a willingness to trust. It will not come from fear, but from faith that the plan of love is in action. It will see no division and seek not for guilt, but desire only the highest good for all. So it will see no division. It doesn't see a you and a me, an us and a them. That just doesn't happen. You know, it's kind of like, you know, the old joke about how, you know, the church is in America and, you know, the church is in Russia. If they're going to war against each other, they're both praying and asking God to be on their side. Right? And they both believe God is on their side. But God doesn't see sides. Spirit doesn't see sides. It's impossible. It's impossible for the spirit point of view to see sides because spirit literally only sees oneself. So anything that spirit does has no division in it whatsoever. So if there's ever a story in your head about, you know, well, you know, he this, and this is in his best interest, and as a result, you should do this, a whole story about a he and a you, that's ego, no matter how good the story sounds. If there is a story about a he and a you or a she and a you, and here's why you should do this, and this is in their best interest, and this will serve them, that's ego still. Spirit is the quick little prompt without the story. The quick little nano prompt without the story. Ego can craft a really good spiritual sounding story. But it will definitely have a you and a him or a you and a her. And this is why you got to do this. And this is how it's going to help them. And blah, 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 blah. Right? Ego. Prompt, quick, nano, prompt, quick, nano. Maybe a lingering feel until you listen. But not a story, ever. Also, Spirit never seeks for guilt. Spirit is not telling you that somebody else is wrong. I've seen people say, I went to Spirit and he told me that my boyfriend should not have cheated on me, and but he did cheat on me, and now it's in my best interest just to walk away. I say, no, Spirit does not tell you that your boyfriend should not have cheated on you. That's ego. Spirit would never say that. Spirit would not say to you, they should not have broken in your house and stolen. That was bad of them. And now that they did, let's do this. Spirit accepts the situation exactly as it is. It's perfect. So Spirit will not tell you that you're guilty, and Spirit will not tell you that someone else is guilty. And if in your journaling you think you're listening to Spirit and it's telling you that somebody else is wrong, that should be a strong indication that you are actually listening to ego. No one else is ever wrong. I've had people email me and tell me that they were talking to Spirit, and Spirit said that, you know, Regina was wrong when she said this, 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 or did this, 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 and you should correct her. You know, I just laugh at that. You know, that's ridiculous. It's just their own judgment coming out on paper. The closest I ever came to anything like that, there was someone that I thought was wrong. I thought he was very wrong. And I went to Spirit thinking Spirit would also agree with me because I was so certain I was right. But fortunately, I really did go to Spirit, not ego. And so I didn't get agreement. In fact, Spirit said nothing about him. Spirit didn't say he's right. Spirit didn't say he's wrong. Spirit didn't even talk about him. Spirit only talked to me about my perception. That's Spirit. And Spirit showed me how my perception was a mistake and how I needed to let things be as they are and not try and change them. So again, if Spirit is telling you someone else is wrong, somebody else should be doing this or should not be doing this, that's not Spirit. Don't be fooled, no matter how spiritual it sounds. It's ego every time, every time. So Spirit will not see division and will not seek for guilt. It does desire only the highest good for all. And again, this is something that you just have to trust. If you get to know your true spiritual prompts, because it doesn't come with a story, you have to trust it's in the highest good for all, even if you can't imagine how. You know, maybe your kid is begging for money, your adult kid begging for money. I need money. I won't be able to pay my rent if you don't give me the money. Blah, 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 blah. And of course you're a parent. I don't want to see my kid out on the streets, you know, but you feel it in your gut. No, you know, no, trust the no. Let the story play out. Spirit loves everyone equally. Spirit is not shortchanging anyone. And in fact, if you give in to your fear, you're the one that's shortchanging everyone. You're extending suffering. Right? You're continuing the addiction. You're getting your fix. You may feel temporarily better when you give your kid the money, but nothing has been resolved. And I do want to say that even though I'm making up stories here, please do not listen to the form of my stories and say, oh, so when my kid asks for money, I shouldn't give it. Please don't do that. I'm saying you need to learn to find your intuition. Maybe when your kid asks for money, your guidance is yes. Maybe your kid just needs a little bit of help over a couple humps and things are going to be fine. So please do not take the form of my story and think that I'm saying that's what Spirit would say. My stories are made up stories. I'm just trying to paint pictures of what this might feel like for you. But what you have to do is tune into the feeling in yourself. This is discernment. And another thing about Spirit is if you look at the form, Spirit does not appear consistent. You will never find consistency in the form. Spirit may tell one parent to give the money and may tell another parent not to give the money. That's because the situations are different. And Spirit knows what's in everyone's best interest. I once took a leadership course that said the best way to treat all of your employees the same is to treat them different. The best way to treat all of your employees the same is to treat them different. And that's because they have different needs. They have different strengths. They have different weaknesses. And so you had to know what the whole course was about, was learning how to really tune into your employee and find out what each employee needed in order to do their best, in order to excel. And you would provide for each employee what that one needed. But that might be different than what another one needs, right? But your goal is the same. This is how you're treating the same. You want to help every one of them to excel. You want to help every one of them to reach their full potential. So you're treating them the same by treating them different. That's what Spirit does. Spirit treats us all the same by treating us different. So don't look for consistency in form. Don't make rules like when an adult kid asks for money, don't give it, right? As soon as you make rules, you don't check for guidance. So all of my stories are made up, unless I happen to say this one happened, like the phone call and the stalker. But a lot of my stories are made up. And they're not intended to teach form. They're intended to help paint pictures so you can get an idea of what spirit might feel like and what ego might feel like and some of the tricks that ego may throw, but still what spirit feels like so you can tell the difference, right? So you will not find division within the purpose of the Holy Spirit. Right reason will not come to you from a desire for defense. It will come from a willingness to trust. It will not come from fear, but from faith that the plan of love is in action. It will see no division and seek not for guilt, but desire only the highest good for all. It will trust your worth and the hands that you are in. As soon as you start hearing a little voice that's telling you you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you can't hear spirit well enough, that's a good one. You can't hear spirit well enough. Why even try, you loser? Do you think that's spirit talking? You'll never be able to hear spirit, you idiot. Do you think that's spirit talking? When you listen to the voice that tells you you'll never be able to do this, you're listening to ego. Spirit trusts your worth. Spirit knows your worth, right? So every time you listen to the voice that tells you you can't, you're not good enough, you'll never be able to, right? You loser, you're the one that's not going to wake up. You're listening to ego. So join spirit in its trust of you. Go ahead and say, sure, I'm going to make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes when they're learning. But I can learn this. Jesus says we're equal as learners. Even Jesus said it took him a long time. He wasn't consistent at it until towards the end of his life, right? Even Jesus said it takes great effort and great willingness, but he says we're equal as learners. I can do this. I just got to keep trying, right? It will trust your worth and the hands you are in. It will be willing to let go and let God. So this last sentence is referring to whenever we have a sense that we need to control or manipulate to a desired outcome, that is ego. The spirit sense in you is willing to just let go and let things unfold and trust God. So anytime you want to control, even if you're trying to save someone, right, from themselves, you know, that sometimes it seems like the most righteous reason to try and control when you're trying to save someone from themselves. You see they're heading for something and you're trying to save them from themselves. You got to control this, but you can feel the fighting in it, right? You can feel it. Whenever you feel that sense of control, you're an ego. The sense in you that is spirit is willing to let go and let God. And if you're not getting a true prompt in the situation, you do nothing. No matter how personal the situation appears, you do nothing. You let go, let God, hands off. Jesus, take the wheel, right? Jesus, take the wheel. The last paragraph. You will know when you follow the reason of the Holy Spirit, because the action you take will not fight for a desired outcome. It will be an action of now, in faith and trust, with all else given to God. So when I feel a prompt, this is the way it's become for me. When I feel a prompt to say something or to do something, I do that and then I step back. So, you know, once upon a time, a very brief story, there were a couple of individuals that I felt in my judgment mind, in my ego, were not right for the Awakening Together board. I felt they were not at all right. And I had previously recommended them, but as I got to know them better, I thought, no, 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 that's a mistake. Well, I happened to go into a chapel during this period of time, and I was in the chapel in contemplation. It came to me clear as day, recommend them. Recommend them. And so I did. I went to the board of directors, and I recommended them. And then I let go. And the board of directors, all on their own, came to the conclusion these two people were not right for the job. See? They didn't need me to control. They didn't need me to tell them, oh, I got to take back my previous recommendation. I was wrong. The right answer was they didn't belong there. That's what happened. But it was my sense of control that was ego. If I had gone in, oh, I got to go back and tell them I'm wrong. I got to control this. I got to make sure this doesn't happen. These guys aren't right. You know what I would be doing? I'd be feeding my ego addiction. And the one thing that's most important to spirit is that we don't feed our ego addiction. Spirit can take care of everything another way. So I had made a recommendation. Turns out it wasn't in the best interest. But when my ego got involved, I got to control this. Spirit's like, no, you step back, stick with your recommendations, you get out of it. And it still worked out so that they were not added to the board. You see? So even righteous control is ego. Even when you're right, if that righteous control is there, it's still ego. And we're learning to listen to only one voice. You see? So we never listen to ego, not even when we're right. So you got to learn to sense ego, right? Ego, again, my way, control, attack, defense, guilt, fear, unworthiness, division, right? Learn what these things feel like, and then you'll know ego. And when you know ego, you also recognize spirit, because spirit has none of that. Spirit is the clean, quiet prompt without any of that. And just as I finish, I'm out of time. So that's perfect. Now it's in your hands. Good luck to you. Remember, you'll make mistakes. Go for it anyway. And I love you. Christopher, the mic is yours.